Well, it's a piece of work that examines for the first time a very private space, and that is the family home. So, family courts in the United Kingdom have traditionally been very private about releasing proceedings, but they've made a concerted effort over the last few years to make transcripts of proceedings available to the public. So, as a researcher, I was very interested in the push factors that were pushing young and vulnerable people under the age of 18 out of their homes in the United Kingdom and making them join these organizations and terror groups in Iraq and Syria. For some time, I had been doing research on the pull factors that encourage women and children, for example, to join Islamic State by looking at the propaganda released by the organization. But what I really wanted to understand was what was happening in these families that was making or pushing them towards these groups. And I began to look through the UK's legal database called Bailey to identify cases to do with radicalization and extremism.
Differentiate again for us the difference between push and pull factors.
Sure. So push factors are things that would drive a person towards a terrorist organization because they're literally pushing the person there. So, in many of these cases, a background of domestic violence going on in the home, criminality, a child being taken out of school, being isolated, all of these things create an environment ripe for radicalization. A pull factor would be propaganda, for example, specifically released by the Islamic State for women and children, which they may be able to access online or through friends, and creates the narrative that this is a group they should belong to and this is a journey that they should be part of. So that would really be the kind of difference between push and pull. One is a attraction and the other one is kind of pushing the person towards that attraction.
Okay, and as you examine the push factors in this particular piece of work, what were your key takeaways?
So one of the things I was looking for in particular was whether there was any difference in age. Was it that younger people were more susceptible to radicalization? Was there any difference in gender? And in fact, when it came to age, the majority of children were between the ages of 6 and 10, so incredibly vulnerable. And in gender, what was fascinating was the cases of the girls when you examined young girls who were put in family courts and had to face judges because they were stopped from getting on planes to join Islamic State. Actually, they were actively seeking out information to do with Islamic State, logistical information, propaganda. They were actively seeking out a kind of maybe the pull factor of marriage that was being communicated in this propaganda, which kind of went against this vulnerable bride narrative that has been, used previously. In fact, the boys, at least in this data set, tended to join the Islamic State under the influence of their families, whereas girls tended to do this independent research. So the gender factor was interesting, the vulnerability and age factor was interesting. Another interesting finding was a history of extremist activity. It seemed to all be in the family. 52% of these families were somehow linked to an extremist group in the UK, either Islamic State, Al-Muhajirun, or they had been influenced directly by extended family members such as uncles. And then when we go back to the broken home or the isolating environment, many of these families, 38%, contained children who had been taken out of school and had been essentially isolated or had normalized violence in the home, either through domestic violence or being shown violent videos or committing acts of violence against other children themselves. So there were multiple interesting factors happening as the key takeaways of this report.
Question about the history. You said 52% had a family history of extremist activity. What does that tell you about the status of the problem now?
Well, it's a very pertinent problem for two reasons. The first is the majority of cases in this report deal with individuals who still remain in the United Kingdom. So they are a very big issue for us. And given that preachers such as Anjum Chaudhry have been released recently. These individuals at the peak had a very sophisticated apparatus in the UK for communication. They had rallies. They would homeschool their children, take them to study circles. So that is potentially an issue. The second issue, which is very important given the news of Shamima Begum recently, is this idea that individuals could be coming back to the UK, young people who have not actually de-radicalized and still subscribe to these very problematic views. And this report shows a kind of legal toolkit that has been used in previous cases and can now be employed for more cases of returnees.
Nikita Malik is the director of the Center on Radicalization and Terrorism at the Henry Jackson Society in London. JJ Green, WTOP News.